and welcome to Animal Voices. Today is Friday, February 8th, 2013. My name's Alyssa. I'm joined in studio today by my co-host Jackie.
Hello.
And Tim on the controls.
Hello.
And Allison's joining us in the way background today, helping out. Thanks for coming, everyone. And thanks for listening. We have an awesome show for you today. In honor of Valentine's Day, we're kind of keeping the heart in mind, love, a bit of romance, a bit of sex, and some chocolate. So, sounds exciting, doesn't it? So we do have part two of love, sex, and veganism today. We did part one, I think it might have been 2011. It was a while ago. On that show, we talked mostly about dating. So vegans dating non-vegans and how to sort of meet people and strike up romance and how difficult it can be in intimate relationships with people who have different philosophical ideas. And we talked about the concept of vegan sexuality, like vegans only dating and sleeping with people who are vegan, and that's interesting. And it was a good talk. We talked a little bit about sexy stuff a little bit in there. So if you want to check out that past show, it's at animalvoices.org. So today is part two. And, well, wrapped up in warm, fuzzy sentiment, Valentine's Day is largely a consumerist holiday. It's a huge boon to the greeting card industry and the chocolate industry. So learning the horrors of the dairy industry and the unimaginable suffering that cows endure so humans can steal their milk, ethical consumers opt for vegan chocolate. And I know I've definitely developed a taste for dark chocolate since becoming vegan, and I know I'm not alone in that. I kind of, you know, mourned the loss of that milky feeling in my mouth, but
dark chocolate's way better.
It is, absolutely. Absolutely. But is vegan chocolate enough? Is that the ethical stamp? How can we be really sure we aren't supporting cruelty with our chocolate purchases? What about fair trade? Is fair trade vegan good enough? Do we know it's coming from an ethical place with no exploitation and suffering? Joining us later in the show to shed light on the dark side of chocolate is Lauren Ornelas of the Food Empowerment Project. We've had her on the show before, but we didn't talk about chocolate. So we're really excited to have her on about that again today. And I just wanted to mention an event coming up on Valentine's Day, the Women's Memorial March in the downtown east side in Vancouver on Coast Salish territories. So the first Women's Memorial March was held in 1991 in response to the murder of a Coast Salish woman on Powell Street in Vancouver. And it's still going strong and getting bigger and bigger every year, 22 years later. It starts at noon from Carnegie, that's at Main and Hastings, right a block away from the Co-op Radio studio here. And then the march proceeds through downtown Eastside with stops to commemorate where women were last seen or found, speeches by community activists at the courthouse, a healing circle at Oppenheimer Park at 2:30, and then a feast at the Japanese Language Hall. Just a bit of background about that. There's increasing deaths of many vulnerable women from the downtown east side. It still leaves family, friends, and loved ones and community members with an overwhelming sense of grief and loss. This year, the Women's Memorial March occurs in the context of the provincial Missing Women's Inquiry, which marginalized the voices and experiences of downtown east side residences, Indigenous communities, and women's groups. So because women continue to go missing and be murdered with no action from any level from government to address these tragedies or the systemic nature of gendered violence, poverty, racism, or colonialism, this February 14th, Women's Memorial March is happening again. So that's noon at Main and Hastings on February 14th. I just wanted to give a moment to share that information, and I hope to see you there. Another event with hearts in mind over the past week was a fundraiser for our local pig sanctuary, Hearts on Noses. Jackie, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was a wonderful event that Carmivore hosted. They were serving some chow veggie food. It was really delicious. I ordered the soft tropical storm, which was it was really good. It was some coconut cream, bean curd, and rice noodles. So that was really delicious, and it was great to see all the people there supporting this wonderful cause.
Nice, yeah. So Carbivore is the vegan store in New West, and Hearts on Noses is the pig sanctuary out in Mission. They have how many pigs there? Like 30?
Oh, I don't know. They have, they have quite a few, and they have horses, too.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really nice place.
Awesome. Yeah, so I think they had a really successful two-day fundraiser over the last weekend. We just wanted to give a shout-out to them. So now on to a special feature for an event that Animal Voices is co-hosting and collaborating with another show. I interviewed Farah recently, the host of Drishti Point. That interview was at a pool hall. Yes, it was. Interesting place to do a yoga interview, but I thought Bar's words really just came across, and I really wanted to share them today on our Valentine's Day show.
My name is Farah Mulji-Nasrali. I'm a yoga teacher and the founder of Drishti Point Yoga Radio. I've been vegetarian for a couple years and am really thrilled that I now made the decision to be vegan. I think I kind of always admired vegans and wanted to be vegan, but I think for a lot of people who make that choice, there's some moment or some experience that inspires them to actually take that step. And for me, it was seeing the movie Peaceful Kingdom. As a yoga teacher, I'm interested in bridging different communities. So, you know, in the yoga world, we spend a lot of time with other yogis. And I think it's so powerful when people can step into another community and share what we learn in yoga and learn from what those other communities are. So I'm really excited to share and be a part more of vegan communities. The yoga community in Vancouver is not, I would say, a community of vegetarians. And my individual yoga community that I belong to is. And so I've been very interested in trying to bring the message of some of the classical teachings about yoga to the yoga community, and I thought that by partnering with Animal Voices Radio and with other vegan groups that we would be able to successfully show people that there's so many connections between embracing a vegan lifestyle and the practice of yoga, and in fact the world view of a vegan lifestyle and the world view of a yogic lifestyle are actually the same.
Can you tell me about your classical yoga training and your roots and how you came to vegetarianism?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you'd ask that, because I can't not in this conversation speak about the person who inspired me to embrace and adopt a vegetarian diet, and that is my yoga guru, my yoga teacher, Paramhans Swami Maheshwarananda. And, you know, when I met him, I understood that yoga is so much more than physical exercises. It's a consciousness. It's a way of being in the world. And for him, yoga is more the state of consciousness that you reach through the practice of meditation, not the physical postures. And that state in yoga is called samadhi, or oneness with all of life. He only accepts students who are vegetarian. And, you know, I didn't realize how profound that decision was until I became vegetarian. And then I had an experience of connecting with life other than human life. And understanding that, you know, all sentient beings are connected in the same way. We all have life in us, and we all have certain needs and desires, and we all have feelings. Really, that moment of realization when I connected with a dog that was in its last breaths, that was when I realized how profound his invitation was to me, or his requirement to be vegetarian was. It was explained that, you know, you can't succeed in meditation unless you have compassion. Mm-hmm. And the way to awaken that compassion is a vegetarian diet.
Mm-hmm. I think this would be a good time to ask, what's your understanding of what ahimsa is and the roots of that word and practice?
In the Yoga Sutras, where that word comes from, it's part of a series of ethics and morality of yoga. And it's actually said that in the eight-limb practice of yoga, you must have the foundation of ethical behavior. Otherwise, the postures don't really work, or they don't have the effect that they're intended to have. And ahimsa is non-violence, non-harm, in everything that we do. So obviously it has implications in our eating habits, but it also has implications in our speech, in our actions, in in the way we interact with others and relationships. It has implications in the work that we do. It has implications in all aspects of our life. So it is a complete way of being in this world, a non-violent way of being in this world.
Now let's talk about the film screening. We've called it Expand Your Love. Why that title?
I think our love is very limited. You know, often for most people, we just love the people who are like us, and we only love humans. So that's a very limited or narrow form of love. I'd say a more, a truer form of love is love that embraces all species and love that embraces all of life and love that is not conditional. So it's not based on how much you love me back, and it's not based on what you do, but it's unconditional. So Expand Your Love is the title to capture this type of love that I think is possible through the practice of yoga and meditation and a vegan lifestyle.
Expand Your Love. Why not do something a little different this Valentine's Day? Your presence is humbly requested at a free film screening of Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, a Grand Jury Prize winner at the Canadian International Film Festival, and winner of Best Feature Documentary at the Peace on Earth Film Festival. Tribe of Heart produces documentaries that awaken compassion and deepen our understanding of the interconnectedness of all life. Thursday, February 14th, 7 p.m., downtown at SFU Harbor Center, 515 West Hastings, in Vancouver, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Brought to you by Drishti Point Yoga Radio and Animal Voices.
Now on the show is time for part two of Love, Sex, and Veganism. Our casual discussion of things under those headings, inspired by Valentine's Day, I guess. Last time, as I said, we talked about relationships and dating and stuff. Today, let's start with love in general, in a broader sense, non-romantic love. It is Family Day on February 11th, the first Family Day in BC, so it's a long weekend for most people here. And I just wanted to talk a little bit quickly about, you know, loving our family members and those closest to us when they don't quite share the same values and passion for animal protection that
exactly.
we do.
I mean, you can certainly share your views, but just have that acceptance and understanding that, you know, they may not be ready, and maybe they will eventually, maybe they won't.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important part of love as well, is just acceptance.
So important to let go.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I hear a lot, and I know from my own experience that it really can be the cause of a lot of tension in
Definitely.
Relationships. 'Cause food rituals around the family are just so loaded with emotion, and it can be really difficult. So I just think, you know, the same compassion that we extend to animals, you know, in cages who are sad and exploited and suffering and dying, needlessly, we need to extend that same compassion to people who aren't ready to make the change, or maybe never will, or just that we all have our own path,
mm-hmm.
and we have to have compassion. And
with saying that, though, still stick to your guns, you know, still be the same activist that you are, but yes, definitely be compassionate.
And Jackie had mentioned it's also Random Acts of Kindness
week.
Next week.
Yeah, nobody knows about this. I actually mentioned, because I saw this randomly, it was actually emailed to me at work, and so I mentioned it to, like, everybody at work. I posted signs, because I'm like, everybody do something random and kind next week. And so, yeah, I just wanted to do a shout-out for that. If you want to find out more information, go to randomactsofkindness.org, and there's some suggestions on random things you can do that are kind.
Nice. So from love to heart health, a new study actually came out just last week from University of Oxford, and they found that the risk of hospitalization or death from heart disease is 32% lower in vegetarians than people who eat meat and fish, according to a new study. And this was a huge study of 20,000 participants since the 90s that were followed, and of course, factors such as age, smoking, alcohol, physical physical activity, educational level, and socioeconomic background were all taken into consideration. It's really, really exciting new study, and it builds on other similar studies that, of course, eating a plant-based diet helps your heart and it helps your blood flow. And as I was kind of doing a bit of research on heart health, I found a really great blog called veganheartdoc.blogspot.com. It's Heather Shankman's blog. She's a cardiologist, vegan ultra marathon runner, and Ironman triathlete.
Wow.
Based in LA. So she's like just the picture of super health, and she, you know, educates and counsels people about plant-based diets. You know, most cardiologists or people in traditional medicine don't mm-hmm. really know that much about nutrition and stuff.
They tell you to decrease your meat intake, but to cut it out altogether, doctors are still a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, or they
that.
Just tell you to take your statins or whatever.
Exactly.
So speaking of just blood flow and everything, I wanted to share a new video from Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau about aphrodisiac foods.
For thousands of years, people have been consuming certain foods for their aphrodisiac qualities, inspired by the alleged effects one experiences upon consuming these foods, but inspired also by their sensory characteristics, how they smell, how they sound, how they look, how they taste, and how they feel. Now, when you think about it, because a healthy body has everything to do with blood flow, blood flowing unhindered to all of the organs in our body, vegan foods, that is to say, fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and grains and mushrooms and beans and herbs and spices, are aphrodisiac foods because by definition, they increase blood flow. Meat, dairy, and eggs, on the other hand, constrict blood vessels, thus decreasing blood flow, thus potentially decreasing the libido. Now, we can narrow down those broad categories of plant foods, so we can pinpoint a few that have very special aphrodisiac qualities, perfect for a romantic dinner. Now, when preparing a romantic meal, we can focus on the visual effects of the foods. The color red, for instance, has long been associated with passion, so we can center our meal on beets or cherries or cranberries. The sensual pomegranate has long been associated with fertility, and the asparagus has been enjoyed as an aphrodisiac because of its shape. Some aphrodisiacs are considered such because of their texture. Agave nectar, derived from a cactus-like plant, oozes a thick, sweet syrup. The romantic effect of champagne has more to do with the bubbles and the feel of the bubbles in our mouth than with the alcohol. And apricots, mangoes, peaches, and tomatoes, known as love apples, are on the list primarily because of their built-in succulents. Many foods cause real physical changes in the body, making them ideal for a romantic meal, plant foods, or destined to douse the fire, animal products. Now, as I said, all plant foods increase blood flow, but some plant foods do this better than others, such as garlic or hot peppers. In fact, turning up the heat, both in terms of temperature and spiciness, can have a powerful effect. My favorite romantic meal might begin with my spicy red bell pepper soup, which is both hot and red, and end with a slice of my Mexican chocolate cake, both of which are in the 30-day vegan challenge. The idea is to excite, not overload or dull the senses. Overeating and excessive alcohol may leave you feeling lethargic rather than libidinous, and even the most sensuous foods and beverages can backfire in excess. To paraphrase Shakespeare, it may provoke and unprovoke. It may provoke the desire, but take away the performance. With a little food for thought, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Go forth and let thy blood flow.
Wow, thanks, Colleen. It's hot in here now.
Yeah.
Pretty common, I think, that most people have heard what vegans taste better.
Vegans taste and smell better, yes. I've heard that, and I don't know if there's necessarily, I guess, studies on this, but there was a study done at Charles University in the Czech Republic where women actually preferred men who ate a vegetarian diet because the men had a significantly more attractive, more pleasant, and less intense body odor than the male participants who ate meat. And of course, we can assume the same for women. And it is suggested that a vegan diet changes the body's overall chemistry, therefore body secretion, smell, and taste much sweeter. So yeah, just people who don't eat dead flesh tend to smell a little better, ironically.
It blows my mind. Yeah. How would that possibly be?
Yeah, so I just had a note here just saying that researchers have found that certain foods cause a chemical reaction in the body that increases the libido in both males and females. So foods with large levels of zinc and vitamin B complexes are said to elevate testosterone levels and boost sexual desire. Many common vegan foods that are rich in zinc and vitamin B are basil, figs, pine nuts, avocado, almonds, asparagus, celery, pumpkin seeds, chickpeas, and bananas. So I think that's something that most vegans probably eat a lot of, especially chickpeas.
Yeah, for sure. We don't have terribly much time. And again, last time on the show, we did mention the vegan sex products. So things like lube and condoms often have things that are not vegan in them, like glycerin or what's in condoms? I can't even remember.
Spermicide?
Honestly, I'm terrible.
It's
I wouldn't know any better than you.
So, Tim, you wanted to share, you found a couple of places locally, or what are alternatives?
Yes, I, in preparation for this show, and purely for science, I called up the well-known good local sex shops, Women's Wear and The Art of Loving in Kids, and I'm happy to announce that both carry a large variety of vegan condoms and vegan lube. And usually they are then also marked as vegan, sometimes even organic lube. And they said that all kinds of sex toys like bondage gear and all kind of things that usually traditionally are used with leather, they come with all other kinds of fabric optional. So you could have them either with PVC or with some kind of cloth or... So they can cater to many needs, and if whatever you're desiring is not available there, then there's an online shop called the Vegan Sex Shop with the, I find, clever tech, cruelty-free except in the bedroom. And they claim to have the, I think they're based in the state, and they claim to have the largest selection of vegan sex toys available. So definitely worth checking out.
Awesome. And perfect. I just kind of wanted to mention that this, you know, personal sex as well. This isn't all partnered. To have a lovely sex life, we can also pleasure ourselves and use, you know, exactly. Lube and some friendly helping products on ourselves. Just wanted to say that. Yeah, what else? We just have a few more minutes. Jackie, did you want to talk about just sort of...
sexuality? Yeah, sure. So I don't want to talk too much about my personal coming out story because I was pretty angsty and it wasn't all that positive. But I can give you like a brief summary. As a teen, I didn't want to have that sit-down, coming-out chat with the family, because that's just not me, and that's pretty awkward. So also, I'm kind of the person, yeah, who doesn't want to make such a statement until I'm completely certain of it, which I wasn't at the time. But after some experimenting, I found out pretty quickly. I just kind of figured, I guess, they would figure it out on their own. They didn't. So I got more angsty, got involved in a not-so-great relationship with a woman, and started some self-destructive behavior. I can go a bit more on that. Parents called the cops on me, but eventually, yeah, they did figure it out, and we did end up having that sit-down discussion that I was kind of avoiding. And at first, I think it was hard for, I guess, it was a little hard for them to accept and for me to accept, and I lost a lot of trust in them, obviously, through the whole procedure. So I spent some time, you know, away from them, and... after all that, though, like when we got back together, we have become more accepting of each other and have a much closer relationship. And I found that coming out as a vegan was somewhat similar in the fact that I also didn't want to make the bold statement that I'm vegan unless I was absolutely sure it would stick. But I did tell people much sooner, and I felt that was also part of what helped it stick, the feeling of accountability. And I also associate the letting go of the dark, angsty part of me as coming out as liking women with the transition towards nonviolence when deciding to go vegan. So I do see those connections there. Also, I've noticed in some families, such as, I think I've mentioned before in the show, my partner, her family is very much meat eaters. So for her, it was a lot more difficult to come out as a vegan than to come out as a lesbian, which is really, I find that really interesting, kind of mind-boggling, but mm-hmm. I don't believe that that's an isolated occurrence at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of coming out, I mean, just bringing it back to the beginning of the show, I know Farah said it's a big deal for her in the yoga community coming out as vegan.
Yeah.
It's like, can be a thing that you sort of, yeah, there's shame about and like that people are in the closet about, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's not something that I wouldn't think it's something to be ashamed of, but I can understand if you're in that situation where no one's like you or no one's accepting of that, it could be difficult.
We did do a show about queer liberation in the past. Aylon did a show on that, and we'll link to it on our blog for this week. I hope to do this segment more in future. Obviously, we have so much to cover in such short time, so it should just be a regular segment so we can get into these topics with a little more depth. So I wanted to share a song by a band called Make Love, which is the work of Merida Anderson. She's a vegan chef who started Vegan Secret Supper in Vancouver and then New York and now Montreal. She's coming out with a book this year called Vegan Secret Supper. And yeah, again, this is her music called Make Love. Chocolate sales over around February 14th total over $1 billion every year. It's a very big business worldwide with some very dark secrets. Here to shed some light is Lauren Ornelas. Lauren is the founder and volunteer executive director of the Food Empowerment Project, a registered nonprofit based in the U.S. which seeks to create a just and sustainable world by recognizing the power of one's food choices. Lauren's been active in the animal rights movement for over 20 years in leadership roles with Viva USA, Viva UK, and In Defense of Animals. Lauren, in the last decade or so, reports of horrific human rights violations in the chocolate trade have hit the worldwide stage. Can you give us a rundown of what the cacao industry looks like today, or cocoa as it's commonly known?
Unfortunately, it hasn't changed that much. We still have the worst forms of child labor taking place in West Africa, where you have children who are using machetes to cut cacao pods out of the trees. There's a number of photographs that you can see where children have scars up and down their legs from these machetes that they're carrying. They also, you know, these cacao pods are pretty heavy, and when they're carrying them, they have these heavy loads. Many times they're beaten for not moving fast enough. And worse is that a lot of these children actually are slaves. Well, we still have slavery taking place in West Africa, where these children, they get to these plantations in a variety of ways. Either they're sold into it, or their families think that they're actually going to make some money and they go there, or sometimes they're actually kidnapped. And in these fields, they're not able to escape, and if they try to, they're beaten. So this is still taking place, even though, you know, this issue has been around for a long time now. Not enough has been done so far to stop these abuses from taking place. And I really appreciate you taking the time out, especially this time of year, to talk about this important issue.
It's the best time, in my opinion, really. So what age of children are we talking?
Some are as young as 7, but some of the ones who have actually escaped, I know that there have been older children who have escaped as well in their teens. So that's how we get a lot of this information. It's not something that, you know, that they want everybody to know about. I mean, those of us who are vegan know that, you know, when you talk about how animals are treated in factory farms and slaughterhouses, it's not something they want the public to know. And it's the same thing with this industry, where you actually have reporters who've gone missing and who are trying to investigate and expose what's taking place in West Africa.
It's my understanding around 2000, it kind of came out that this was happening. Why haven't changes been made since then? It seems so egregious and so horrific. What's sort of getting in the way of ending this?
Well, I think it's kind of like it is with many industries, which is profit. You know, these corporations know that not a lot of people know about this. Still, I speak on this issue. And most people really don't know what's happening in West Africa. They don't know what's happening to these children. A lot of people today don't have a hard time even comprehending the fact that slavery still is in existence. Mm-hmm. So I think with this issue, you know, again, it's not on the package. It's an issue that, you know, we're not getting a lot of commercial time for. The government has tried to do things. They've tried to pass, you know, protocol to try and change things about, you know, where we purchase from, that making sure it doesn't come from places like this, but nothing really has a lot of teeth. There have been some established ways of studying the issue, but, you know, for us, it's not a matter of studying, it's a matter of ending it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really feel like the more consumers know, the more consumers can make a difference and speak out against what's happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So I wonder if you can offer explanation of why this type of injustice, this child labor and slavery, is specifically concentrated in West Africa.
I wish I knew. I mean, I would like to pretend I'm an expert and I know exactly why. I mean, but overall it's poverty. We're talking about some countries nearby that are incredibly poor, like Burkina Faso and Mali. They're very, very poor areas. And you have the fact that cacao is only grown in certain parts of the world, and one of the areas happens to be in West Africa.
Is it right that about 70% comes from there?
70 to 75% comes from West Africa, mm-hmm. Yeah. So the vast majority is coming from this area of the world. And, you know, when you don't have, you know, these are outside corporations who are going into West Africa and exploiting that country's resources in terms of the people and its land. And so I think that you have an area where this is, where corporations are being able to do whatever they want to do. And luckily, my understanding is that Ghana is actually trying to make a change, that Ghana is making improvements in what's happening. And so, and that is where, you know, one of the best cooperatives that we know of exists is in Ghana. And from all reports that we've heard from people who have been down there is that they're taking this issue seriously. And Ghana, in fact, has a law saying that kids need to be in school. So when they're finding these children out in these fields, that's in violation of the law in Ghana. So that's actually going to help try and get some of these kids a better life.
Mm-hmm. Just to get a further sense of the scope, is this like happening on majority of farms there, or is this just a few bad farms, or like how many kids would you say are involved?
It's estimated between Ghana and the Ivory Coast is about 1.8 million children. who are victims of the worst forms of child labor.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And we know that there's a film called The Dark Side of Chocolate. And we do know from that film, when they would just go out to different areas, they would find kids all the time. So, you know, again, the worst forms of child labor includes, you know, the fact that they're carrying these heavy machetes, that they're exposed to agricultural chemicals. So it seems pretty prevalent that it's taking place there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, is it just cacao? Like, is it also coffee and maybe other crops as well, or...?
You know, our work has primarily been done on cacao because we know that's where the outright slavery is taking place. We do have some information on our website about some of the other issues where we do know that slavery is taking place as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the scope of it, mm-hmm. it's kind of why we focus on chocolate, I think.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Okay, so what can, you know, we as consumers trying to be ethical and make the best choices we can, we probably go for vegan, we probably go for fair trade. Can you talk about, like, what fair trade means? Is that enough? Does that guarantee the chocolate is slave-free?
Well, there's nothing that, unless you're growing it yourself, I guess there's no way that we as consumers can know for 100% sure that anything is slave-free. That's why Food Empowerment Project, we have a list of vegan chocolates that we recommend that do not source from West Africa. Because it's so prevalent in West Africa, it seems best at this point to just avoid it altogether, other than this one cooperative in Ghana. Unfortunately, fair trade, they have found children working in fair trade fields before, and again, to the credit of the fair trade people, the children were pulled out and put into school. But we've heard a lot of complaints about fair trade maybe not really having as many farmers at the table than they should.
Mm-hmm.
The fair trade is actually the market value of a product, of the cacao, not necessarily a living wage for the people. So although, you know, it's a good start, we don't feel comfortable just on the basis of a fair trade label saying, okay, you can buy from that. But it's just so prevalent in West Africa that it's best to avoid it.
I've heard the argument that, some people say because these fair trade initiatives had farms which they had to suspend because child labors were found there, that was seen as evidence that the fair trade system is flawed as well. On the other hand, people argue that exactly it's a sign that the fair trade system is working, that these farms were found and the relations with them were suspended. What is your take on that?
I get that completely. I understand that they're saying, oh, this is proof that it's working, that we found it and we're trying to remedy the situation. For us, the fact that they're still finding it, in a fair trade field, I mean, the reason why they use children or the reason why they enslave people is because they are not getting enough money. So inherently there has to be a problem in how much money they're not getting if they're still turning to that form of getting labor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our feeling is in some ways, absolutely, that's great. But our feeling more and more recently after studying and learning more about this issue is that maybe cooperatives really is going to be the best solution, where you have the farmers making the decisions for themselves, for their livelihoods, for their families, for their villages, that they make the decisions. And it's not a westernized entity coming in and telling them what they should or shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. It sounds also like on the consumer end of things that the prices would have to be probably jacked way up in order to, because we really shouldn't be paying a dollar for a chocolate bar, whatever, for the real cost of it is like way, way bigger. I know locally there's a chocolate brand called Zimt. It's raw chocolate, and they're on your recommended list. And their bars, it's like one bar for $5. And it, like, you look at it and you think, oh, that's way too much. But when you think about the real cost of chocolate, it makes sense.
Things are cheap for a reason.
So you mentioned You mentioned, Lauren, that you do have a list on your website. Let's talk a bit about that list. There are some surprises on the list of companies that you don't recommend who either didn't respond or who wouldn't disclose which country their chocolate comes from. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. I mean, we're trying to be as transparent as possible on our list, and we give a full disclosure of everything, and we feel that people need to know where the companies they're purchasing from, where they stand as well. So our list is broken into the companies that we recommend, which means they don't source from West Africa other than Divine, which sources from a cooperative in Ghana, as well as all the ones we don't recommend and why. We are a vegan organization, and fortunately a lot of the companies who won't even disclose to us and won't even respond to us are vegan companies. And we feel that, you know, vegans need to use their voices and demand some answers. One of the companies who won't disclose to us the country of origin is Clif Bar. And Clif Bar portrays themselves as a very sustainable company, and in some ways they really are, but they're not being transparent. In fact, they claim that where they source their cacao from is proprietary information. And as you can see, there, we have loads of companies on our list who understand the bigger picture here and who are willing to disclose, even if they don't fall on our recommended list, but understand the importance at least of being transparent to their consumers.
Mm-hmm. So you have a petition for Clif Bar, who also makes Luna Bars, to disclose, and that's on your website, I guess. What's your hopes with your petition?
We are looking for thousands of signatures on our petition to Clif Bar. It's important for them to understand that they can't hide on this issue, that they can't hide behind some claim of proprietary information when we're talking about something as serious as child labor. This is an important issue, and we have the right to know, and we have a right to take a stand against some of these abuses that are taking place. Our website is foodispower.org. And there you can find the petition as well as under resources, our chocolate list as well.
Good, good. So that's one thing that individuals can do is sign that petition to Clif Bar. Can you share your thoughts on what you think needs to happen in the big picture for this to come to an end?
Sure. Well, I think that, I mean, what people can do, one, is just be aware of the issue. Like, it's the easiest thing you can do is recognize that this is happening, accept that it's happening. And it's not easy to accept that this is happening today, but I can say in 2013 that we still have children who are enslaved for a commodity like cacao. I mean, it's hard to wrap our head around, especially people who are very compassionate. And so just like we do when we talk about animals who are raised and killed for food or animals in entertainment or other forms of animal abuse, it's a shock to realize and accept that it's happening. Step two is always trying to figure out what you can do in your own life to not participate in that suffering and in that cruelty, and that's making sure that you don't buy chocolate that comes from West Africa. Mm-hmm. And again, we encourage you to use our list. And after that is to use your voice. Use your voice to speak out against what's happening and contact these companies. Contact your favorite company who isn't on our recommended list and ask them, where are you sourcing your cacao if they're not being transparent? And if they are being transparent but they're not on the recommended list, ask them to switch suppliers. We've heard from a number of companies who contacted us and said, we want to switch suppliers. So we have a list ready for companies to help them make the switch. And that's what we want them to do. We need to take a stand against what's happening there in West Africa. And when you talk about the bigger picture, I mean, I think that when you hear companies like Nestle and Hershey say things like, we know what's happening there and we're working on it, I find that to be absolutely obscene. You stop it. You cease production there until you can figure out what needs to happen. And again, they know what needs to happen. They need to pay these farmers what they deserve. They need to pay these people a living wage. And until that happens, this is going to continue. And until these corporations are held accountable, this is going to continue to happen. So if the Hershey guy needs however many houses or yachts or whatever he needs, whatever, it's going to have to cease. These people are going to have to take some responsibility for the fact that they are responsible for what's happening. And it's only through our voices as consumers can we make sure that they hear it.
I really appreciate the work of Food Empowerment Project about issues like this and other food justice issues, bringing veganism to to a bigger picture, not only focusing on non-human animal exploitation, but human animal exploitation as well. We just have a few minutes. I'm just sort of curious, I guess, personally, how do you feel about the label of vegan? Does it necessarily include, human suffering? And can companies call themselves cruelty-free or vegan? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I like it. I see that companies who call their chocolate cruelty-free, if it comes from West Africa other than a cooperative, and, you know, I think that they can't do that. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right. And I think it gives the wrong impression.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can't be cruelty-free off the backs of children, off of slavery. That's not cruelty-free. And so in terms of vegan, I don't really even want to touch the definition of vegan, because we have enough time getting people to understand that vegan is no animal products, period.
Yeah.
That I do believe strongly that we, as vegans, that we came into a consciousness and understanding about suffering and wanting to do something about it. And I believe that all of us owe it to ourselves and the planet, basically, in the world, that we live up to this. That if we say we make these choices because we care about ending suffering, because we care about justice, then that justice needs to expand and that compassion needs to expand to all. And I think that if anybody can do it, the vegans are really the ones who are the best place to do it.
Thank you so much, Lauren Ornelas, for joining us today again. The website is foodispower.org, and the organization is called Food Empowerment Project. Thanks, Lauren. We hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you. Thanks for all y'all do as well. Take care.
To learn more about what Lauren does around labor conditions for produce workers and the disparity of healthy food choices in low-income neighborhoods, please do check out the previous interview we did with Lauren in May of 2011 at animalvoices.org. I wanted to mention quickly, if you're curious about how race and class matter and affect mainstream vegan consumer philosophy, if this has sparked your curiosity, the Sista Vegan Project is presenting a two-hour webinar in March, on March 17th. It's called, "What Do You Mean My Vegan Chocolate May Not Be Cruelty-Free? Critical Race and Decolonial Approaches to Ethical Consumption in the USA." Again, it's March 17th, 11 to 1, and it costs about $30. And you can check out sistavegan.com. That's sistavegan.com.
All right, and I quickly wanted to mention a couple events coming up. So first up is the Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp, presented by Liberation BC on February 23rd and 24th. So this is an opportunity for Vancouver activists to get together and learn from each other's experiences, build a stronger community of animal advocates. Advance registration is required. And to keep informed on this event, please go to animaladvocacycamp.ca. Also, you can join the Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp Facebook group to keep in touch with fellow advocates prior to and after the camp. Just search for Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp to request to join. And also, the very exciting Vegan Prom is coming up. Yeah, March 9th.
Superhero style.
Exactly. I'll have my cape on. March 9th at the Wise Hall, which is 1882 Adnex Street in Vancouver. And it will take place from 8 p.m. to midnight. And this is a 19-plus event only, so please leave your children at home. This is a great event for anyone wanting to get to know more people in the vegan community, or even just to have a great date night. So dress as whatever superhero you feel inspired to be. You can make up your own. You can come as, you know, Wonder Woman, whatever you want. Dress up as Kale. Just come as you are. And to find out more information, go to veganprom.ca.
Dun, 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 dun.
I like that. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. On next week's show, we will be talking with Teresa Telecki, Director for Wildlife for the Humane Society International, on the proposal to ban international trade of polar bear parts, plus other threats to the polar bears. We'll also be chatting with Finn Donnelly about the February 11th parliamentary vote on Bill C-380 to ban the shark fin trade Canada-wide. So to find out more about our show or to listen to podcasts, go to animalvoices.org. Sorry. Yeah. Please give us any feedback that you have about the show at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Yeah, and I just wanted to end with a movie recommendation. So if you're going to rent a movie this week, the one you should rent or download or see, I don't know, don't think it's available on Netflix, is Animals in Love, a film by Laurent Charbonnier. It is a movie about just, yeah, animal love scenes, coupling.
So
and
cute.
It is so heartwarming. It's like animals all over the world just like loving each
other. Can I borrow that after?
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know where it is, okay. But I have the case
I
here.
I didn't want to see it first, and then I loved it.
It's so good. So, yes, Animals in Love. Enjoy that this week. And I'm going to leave you with a song called Love for All Living Beings by Buckman Coe, local Vancouver artist.
We just want to do a quick shout out to Carl Loskin, if you're still listening, Carl. And
happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. It was his birthday yesterday. So thanks so much for being one of our biggest supporters on Animal Voices.
Oh, yeah. You've been talking about this way too long, sister. Wanna see this succeed. And you know I won't just be sitting there on the sidelines. Be out there planting seeds. Punks down in Mexico City. They had no